It's Big Wave Dave, KSDP Radio. We have on the phone right now Trent Hartel, our area management biologist, and we'll be talking about the Barredi fishery or lack thereof. Good morning, Trent.
Good morning.
So what have you come up with your survey? I went through both packets, and it was quite interesting stuff, but me being not trained in science or biology, it's best for you, I think, to explain your findings here for us.
Sure. Well, just to start out, for a tanner crab fishery to happen in the peninsula, a couple things have to happen. And first, the abundance of mature males have to meet established thresholds for each of the eastern and western sections of the South Peninsula District. And if that happens, secondly, the abundance of mature males has to be sufficient to provide for a 200,000-pound GHL for each of those sections. So after the 2014 survey, the eastern section did not meet the abundance threshold to have a fishery, and the western section did. As you know, there won't be a season in the western section, and that's based on the results of the survey. And there's a number of reasons why we decided to hold off on having a season this year. First, there was a record low number of legal sized male crab that recruited into the population. And second, there was about 90% of all the legal sized crab were found in just a couple of stations in Morshovi Bay. So that basically means that the legal sized population was highly concentrated, and there was very few legal sized male crab that were found outside of Morshovi Bay. There was a high ratio of juvenile or sublegal males was very high to the legal sized male crab. So that essentially means that those sublegal and juvenile crab were highly susceptible to bycatch mortality if we were to have a fishery. So that combination of reasons is really why we held off on having a season this year.
Yeah, sure. I see that. I noticed that in one spot I noticed, Morshovi, I think it was, where there was an abnormal amount of females, and I can just imagine that on the bycatch. You know, we're going to lose a bunch. I really think that's a smart call. But let me see. I got some questions here. Is there a pattern or cycle of, you know, like many crab one year and a few crabs the next year, or maybe 3 years at a time? I noticed on one of the charts, like 2006 to 2009, it was an abundance, and then there's nothing, and it's like it's starting to come back now. It's like 4 year, 5 year cycles. Is that paradigm? Is that what's going on here, or is it just a fluke?
Well, we do seem to see some cyclical patterns in the population, and it's difficult to draw any hard and fast conclusions from what we've seen. But in general, it seems that when we have a large cohort that is recruited into the fishery, they persist for several years. So they occupy a niche that the smaller crab or the juvenile crab aren't able to capitalize upon. So as we saw in, the late, 2008, 2009, 2010, some of those larger population years, that cohort of crab is cycling out of the population. So now in, 2012 to 2014, we saw some low populations, and then we're starting to see some signs of recruitment. So, there is some positive signs out there where it appears that we are seeing some large cohorts, some large recruitment events that are occurring, and it's likely that some of the large recruitment events that we saw in 2013 and even in some areas in 2014 are from those large years that we saw in 2008, 2009, 2010.
Interesting. Very interesting. I was talking to an archaeologist here a number of years ago. He was digging in some middens out this way, and what he found was, looking at food habits of the ancient Aleuts, and he'd find, layers of, the shell middens, checking, again, checking food habits, he'd find a lot of evidence of feasting on crab, you know, for years and years and years, and then it would switch to cod and then back to crab. So is there any, like, long-term cycles that you're aware of at all? I mean, are we going to see crab coming in and cod going out? It's what I'm trying to ask here, because it looks like from archaeology evidence that could be what's happening. But I don't know. It seems kind of nothing I can pretty put my finger on. You know, it's theory, but it's backed up by, you know, like, again, archaeological evidence. So what's your take on that?
You know, those are some pretty sophisticated and deep questions there. I think that you're on the right track in terms of long-term regime shifts.
Sure.
You know, I honestly can't provide any in-depth or specific detailed you know, knowledge regarding, you know, what may happen, but over time we have seen some oceanographic shifts that favor different species in different ways. So you're correct that there has been times in the past where you know, shellfish species in particular, so say crab and shrimp, have been favored and have been in high abundances and you know, are very prevalent. Whereas there's other oceanographic conditions that favor you know, groundfish species, so cod, pollock, etc., and they thrive and are in high numbers. What that means for our current conditions and how that will translate into future fisheries or future population abundances is pretty difficult to tell. But you know, right now, obviously, there's some high numbers of cod and pollock in the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea. You know, but we're also seeing, like I said, some good positive signs of some tanner crab recruitment.
Yeah, so it looks favorable for a sustainable harvest here coming up, from what I gather from, you know, the information that you've given me, and you know, that definitely looks good. Do you have anything to chime in on here, Virge?
I had a couple of questions. This is Virgil Porter with KSDP. How you doing, Trent?
Good morning, Virgil.
Good morning. I was just curious on how you selected your trawl survey stations. These areas that you know, in your trawl data, how do you pick the spots? I noticed there's a couple of blank spots, like the southwest of Unga wasn't trawled, and nothing east of Nagai. Now, is there just, these are the historical stations that you've done, or do you adjust them during different periods when you're doing your surveys?
No. So the stations are based on historical catch and effort. So the trawl survey stations have been in place since the late 80s, and they were formulated based on what the historical distribution of the actual fleet's fishing patterns. So where did they fish? Where did they actually catch crab? Because that, you know, at the time, the trawl survey wanted to catch crab and be reflective of what the populations were doing. So, you know, it was based on you know, where the crab were. You know, and the reason, and since that time, we've maintained the same stations year in and year out. And I think one of the strengths of the survey is its consistency. So by going to the same stations on an annual basis, we're able to track changes in the population. You know, so if there's large numbers of crab, you know, in any given number of years, we're able to see and detect trends in the population over time. You know, that said, you know, we're well aware that there's places that we don't survey that do have crab. And that's a challenge for us to incorporate that into, you know, into the overall process of establishing seasons. But, you know, I think it's important just to remember that the survey is an index. You know, we don't have a model to input any data like the Bering Sea crab fisheries have. You know, its strength is its, you know, consistency in the time series and the data, and you know, its ability to compare, you know, the populations through time.
Right. I just wasn't sure how often you had altered these stations or whether they did, you know, if there was deliveries that, you know, were harvested from a certain area, whether you adjusted and went and surveyed those areas that people were picking up crab. I wasn't sure how flexible or malleable it is. But, you know, if it stands as an index, that's grand.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one thing I'm curious on here, too, and that's the harvest in the Bering Sea for crab this season is just gone bonkers. And the biologists are saying, where do these crabs come from? Because, you know, they haven't been found. I know when I was on a research boat up there, I think it was the summer of 92, we were dragging the rag about every 20 miles, us and another boat. And we went, you know, we went from, you know, Bristol Bay all the way up basically almost to Nome. And these were thick around St. Matthew, of course, but... you know, could that be happening with our Baradai? They just disappear and they can just walk back to where, you know what I mean? You know, they move. That's what I'm saying. But where were these Bering Sea crab? Are you guys privy to a Russian fishery? Maybe they just came, you know, came east. You know, I don't know. What's your thoughts on that? It's something that really I'm curious about.
Well, you know, the Bering Sea crab fisheries are really outside my jurisdiction. But just from a kind of a broad perspective, crabs certainly move. They've got legs. They can move to different areas. You know, and there's been times in the past where we've suspected that, you know, some crab have gone into deeper waters or, you know, have moved throughout the areas. You know, the large scale changes in the Bering Sea, I can't really comment on as to you know what the specific drivers may be, but you know, kind of the fundamental difference between the process of establishing harvest limits in the Bering Sea and in the Gulf is that, you know, they have a model and they're able to, you know, account for natural mortality and you know, overall size class contributions. You know, it's a very sophisticated and complicated process, and you know, if any of those variables changes, or if they make a change to certain inputs or variables, it can have a large scale impact on the overall output of the model. So, you know, I don't know the specifics of, you know, why or how, you know, those catch limits changed from, you know, last year to this year, but there's more opportunity for inputs to the model or parameters to influence those types of changes.
Yeah, it's really a profound change. I noticed too when I was down in the Puget Sound area about 4 or 5 years, about 4 years ago now, that I didn't believe it, but they showed me pictures. There was Baradai and quite a few of them found off the west side of Whidbey Island in Puget Sound. That was amazing. I don't recall ever a Baradai being down there. You know, I mean, how did they get there? I mean, where they go and they must roll in bundles like the king crab or something. I don't know, but I just find that fascinating. You know, this whole thing. You guys have a lot to do to keep up with this. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Moving on, Trent. You in our off-air discussions, you had mentioned you're dealing with the cod as well, and I know it is a little bit early in the game. Yeah. Do you have anything to pitch in concerning the state cod? Maybe we could get that out of you.
Sure. So just from a broad perspective, the groundfish plan team, which recommends catch limits, is meeting right now, and some of the preliminary indications are that the overall abundance of cod is up in the Gulf of Alaska. So the population as a whole is projected to increase somewhere roughly about 10% over last year. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it will be a direct 10% increase in the Western Gulf or the South Alaska Peninsula, because the overall population is apportioned by the management areas, so Western Gulf, Central Gulf, and Eastern Gulf. And that 10% may be reflected differently, you know, based on where most of that population increase is. But I think the take-home message is that as of now, the catch limits for 2015 are projected, catch limits in the South Peninsula for 2015 are projected to increase moderately.
And any, I guess Chignik falls in line with that as well, because we're all looking at the Gulf of Alaska, or any word on them?
Yeah, so the Chignik area, GHL, is based off of a percentage of the central Gulf of Alaska ABC, or acceptable biological catch. And if the central Gulf increases, then the Chignik area would also see a moderate increase.
All righty.
And that was same with Kodiak, too, I would think, because I find it odd that Kodiak is really lacking in crab these days.
Yeah, so for cod, at least, the overall catch limits would also increase in Kodiak.
Perfect, perfect.
All righty. So do you get to come and visit out west here a little bit, or are you going to be in Kodiak this spring?
No, I'm planning on making a trip out there for a preseason meeting prior to the cod season. So tentatively sometime in early March for just basically a meet and greet, get to know some of the fleet participants, check out some boats, and also, you know, try to provide some information and about the state cod fisheries, and you know how we're going to manage the fishery and how things are looking. So I hope to be able to make it to King Cove, and it'd be great to get to Sandpoint. I was there last year, but we'll see how that shakes out. But yeah, looking forward to meeting some people and you know, getting to know some of the operations.
Yeah, we'd appreciate a live interview too if you're in town here to stop into the city building and come on right up into KSDP, and we'll just put you right on air.
You bet.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks a lot, Trent. That was very, very, very informative.
Once again, Trent Ardhill, Assistant Area Management Biologist for Groundfish and Shellfish, live on KSDP. Thanks for taking the time out of your day. Any information on these trawl surveys, they're at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website and at apradio.org. We have them linked up there at the top of the page.
Thanks.
Take it easy, Trent, and enjoy the rest of your day.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Again.